In this episode of the New York Baseball Podcast, Wally and I sit down with MLB Network's Brian Kenny.
Saber geek extraordinaire. Me and him are going to go at it. You wait, man.
He's like the leader of the sabermetrician movement.
Yes, he's like the Einstein of baseball numbers geeks. So, yeah, we'll have some fun with him.
We'll get all his thoughts on the midseason awards. And this show, we will be talking with a lot of focus on the midseason awards and just an overall look at baseball right now between the shift and striking out. You heard it all. And we're going to get to it here coming up next on the New York Baseball Podcast. Okay, we are back for another edition of the New York Baseball Podcast with your usual suspects, Dan Canobio and Wallace Matthews. In this episode, we got a big one. We got Brian Kenny coming on the show. He will give us everything you want to know about the sabermetric movement, and we'll get his thoughts on all of the midseason awards and what he thinks about the shift. All that. Wally, how are you?
I'm really well, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing good. We're coming to you from the Comfort Inn in Syosset.
Yep. Very comfortable, by the way, and good coffee.
Good coffee, and we're here, and we're not in our usual studio, but we're going to give you the usual podcast, talking about not just Yankees and Mets. We'll get to all that, too, but in this episode, we're going to focus in on the midseason awards, and we're also going to focus on some of the underlying trends and topics here, and no better person to talk to than Brian Kenny.
Yeah, we're definitely going to crunch some numbers because Brian is the quintessential numbers geek. This is going to be fun because me and him have kind of a love-hate relationship. I question the validity of some of the numbers. He lives by them, so I'm sure we're going to go back and forth a lot.
Yeah, and in addition to that, we'll get to right now. We'll get to it with this the story that is just dominating everything right now. The headlines dominating on Instagram. I don't know if you saw this. Manny Machado to the Yankees. Someone posted a picture of him in a Yankees jersey, a Photoshop. And who liked it? Manny Machado threw a little like on there. So he's fueling the flames here,
well,
Manny.
Obviously, he can't wait to get out of Baltimore, and I can't blame him. But, you know.
What's going on here? Tell me. I don't know
what's going on. This is the great thing about the internet. 2 days ago, I wrote a column for Forbes.com saying the Yankees don't need Machado. Forget about him. You really need a pitcher. Of course, that seemed to ratchet up their interest in Machado. Suddenly now.
Cashman read it?
No, I don't think so. But in any event, now I do think that they're interested in him, whether it's real interest or whether they're just trying to drive up the price for their rivals remains to be seen.
I have two theories. There is the Stanton effect, which you have to check in when there's someone out there and at least – you know, do your due diligence. And I understand that.
There's also a theory out there, and I think it's a good one, that, you know, when a Hall of Famer, and let's face it, if Manny Machado plays 15 years and continues to produce the way he is, he's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. He's gone to Cooperstown. There's no doubt about it. If you have a chance to get that kind of a player, you have to try.
Exactly. That's the same thing they did with Stanton. They weren't looking for Giancarlo Stanton. He kind of just ended up in their lap. So that's what that Cashman's doing. That's one of my theories.
This guy's not going to come as cheap as Stanton did.
The other theory is that maybe Cashman is playing a little bit of mind games with the general managers. Yes, Jay Happ, they're asking for a King's Ransom. I don't know what some of the other names that are out there. But maybe he's saying, you know what, I'm moving on from pitching. You know, I'll acquire Machado and Britton, which no one's talking about, and I will just have a super-duper bullpen, and we'll maybe then, you know, go after a even lesser than a J.A. Happ and acquire him. So maybe, you know, Cashman's doing a little twofold here.
2 points there. First of all, if they're interested in Zach Britton, and of course that name's been thrown around quite a bit, obviously they are concerned about Chapman and his knee.
His knee is bulky, but the one thing is that now with the emergence of Betances, and they also have Robinson that also has who's had a bunch of saves.
Yeah, nothing like having four closers.
Yeah, the Yankees have four closers. They don't really need Britton, but you know, I'm trying to figure out what's going into the thought process.
Well,
right
I think
now,
there's
Brian
a third.
Cashman.
I think there's a third possibility, and that is, you know, look, Cashman knows he does need a starting pitcher. He's not moving away from it. Maybe he thinks you bring in Machado, now I can part with Andujar or even Gleyber Torres to get a really top-flight starter. Maybe this is some kind of grand plan to bring Jacob DeGrom to the Bronx or somebody like that.
Isn't this something that a team does when they're scuffling? Like, this is something that maybe like the Nationals would do right now, that are a 500 team that have all these expectations. They're going to just kind of not blow it up, but kind of just do something crazy. Like, remember when the Dodgers and the Red Sox made that trade with Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford?
Yeah.
A big reshuffle. The Yankees are 30 games over. They're finally set up underneath the financially and on the field. They have a great team with chemistry. They have a great young team. And now all of a sudden we're going to just blow it all up because Manny Machado is going to come play third.
I don't think that would be blowing it up. I don't think parting with one of those two guys would be blowing it up.
not exactly blowing out, for a lack of a better term, but they're going to acquire Machado, then they're going to, and after that move,
it makes Didi Gregorius expendable.
Yeah, they're
going to
either trade Didi or they're going to trade Andujar, like you said, Torres. So it's like a twofold move here, and it just, but, I think it's just way too much.
But think about it, Machado is an upgrade over any one of those three players, including Gleyber.
But when does it come too much?
Isn't he?
Yes, 100%.
When does it become too much? When is too much ever too much for the Yankees?
That's the reason I enjoyed 2017 so, probably my most enjoyable season as a Yankee fan, is because they were the little engine that could.
Well, they're not that anymore.
They were, you know, I had zero expectations going into the season, and then they finally had a homegrown team that I can just, you know, whenever
they
my friends.
They weren't that anyway last
but they had,
year.
At least they had a homegrown team, and, you know, what was people always say about the Yankees, and something I've heard my whole life, is you guys just buy everyone. You
right.
just go out. But finally, we had a team of nine guys, outside of maybe a few that were acquired in trades, mm-hmm. that were homegrown players, so that went out the window now. So now we add Stanton, which I hated, and I still hate. I don't care how many home runs he hits. And now we're going to add Manny Machado and potentially Jacob deGrom. It's like they're turning into the evil empire times 100.
It's like the Lakers, right?
Worse.
It's worse.
I can't stand it.
This is the Yankees. This is what they do, okay? This is what they do. If there is a shiny object out there and they think makes them better, they go out and get it.
I'm interested to see how many fans out there want Machado, because I really don't think it's that many. Maybe
you know,
a poll
from
on
my
Twitter
feed, I think it's kind of split.
Let's do a poll.
Add Oyster Bay Bomber. Let me know what you think. But yeah. I think so far it's been pretty split. I mean, some people say we don't need him. You know, we can live without him. Get us a pitcher. And other guys are like, you know, you have a chance to get a guy like Machado, you do it.
It's something that the Mets should do. The Mets should be making a move for Machado. The Mets are the ones that should be coming up with all these crazy scenarios. Not the Yankees.
If I was the Mets, I would tear everything down
fan,
to
I'm
the roots.
Pissed off. If I was a maybe someone should make a Photoshop of Machado in a Mets jersey and see if he likes it.
Well, if I tell you, I guarantee he won't. But the problem with the Mets, this is why the Mets operate the way they do. In some ways, it's because of their fan base, which, yes, does get angry, but a lot of times kind of expects the worst and says, well, you know, it's the Mets. This is the way we do it. If the Met fan base was like the Yankee fan base, Jeff Wilpon would be forced to do business a little bit differently.
Yeah, exactly. If there was a winning culture, if there was a demand for to win, not just a demand to get a couple walk-off hits or a demand for – I just
feel like the Met fan base just is conditioned to failure, expects it, is very
fair.
Happy
they're
when things
fans.
Are going well. Yeah, but you know what? These are the kind of fans that a guy like Jeff Wilpon will take advantage of, because he knows they're not going to desert him. They're going to say, oh, well, that's just our lot in life, and maybe next year, blah, blah, blah. That's wrong. You got to take this guy to task.
You know what the Mets are right now? And they've had three walk-offs in the last week. Those are just nice little distractions.
Yeah.
The Mets right now are the meme of it's the dog in the middle of a burning room, and he's saying, "This is fine. This is fine. This is fine. This is fine. We're getting walk-off home runs, but we have three GMs. We
right.
have a manager that does not know what he's doing. I don't care what you say.
He's over his head.
He can talk." I feel like right now, in this scenario we're in right now, I feel like this is how Callaway sits at his press conferences, and all these empty chairs or all the reporters. That's him trying to talk his way out of the fact that he brought in Jerry Blevins to face a righty.
The difference between him and us is that we're not sitting here like a couple of deer in the headlights.
He is.
Without a doubt. He's definitely in over his head. He scrambles to answer in ways that make him look good but don't tell the truth. And, you know, you can't fool people like that. And I was there. You know, the night that he left Familia in too long, he didn't have Swarzak ready. And instead of, you know, either owning up to his mistake or saying, you know, I thought Jarris had, you know, was going to pull us together, he comes up with some condescending BS about, well, this is the way things work in baseball.
Let me tell you, yeah, exactly.
You know,
talking
did you know
down.
That there's a phone from the dugout to the bullpen? Yeah, we do know that, you know, Mickey. Do you know this is New York and you're not going to get away with that?
It's been a rough go of it, and it's going to be very interesting to see. This is why I bring up that meme where this is fine, and the Mets are in a
it's
burning.
Like the boiled frog theory.
They're in a burning room right now. It's because, like, what is going on with this team? They've got three GMs. They're in the midst of now they say they're not going to trade. They're most likely not going to trade DeGrom and Syndergaard. They're kind of going to Band-Aid, and they're going to go out next year. And how about this, Wally? Yoannis Cespedes told the Mets that he wants to play
first base.
He tells them when he's hurt. He tells them how long he's going to be out.
Why don't they just make him the GM?
He tells them – that's not a bad idea. Let's put him in the running now, because they have no GM, and now Cespedes is calling the shots.
Oh, you know what? Let me get back to Mickey for 1 second, all right? Guy's a rookie manager. He's got an aging roster. He has a superstar who's very reluctant to play when he's hurt. In fact, won't play when he's hurt. He has a meddling owner, and he has no GM, because when you have three GMs, you really don't have a GM.
Do you think he wishes he was still the pitching coach?
Maybe. But what I was going to say is, yes, he's in over his head, but damn, he's in a bad situation.
Really
bad. It's a situation where, you know, even an experienced manager would have a tough time making a go of this.
Do you think he – obviously, I think he'll last the whole season. They're not going to fire him midway through, because they're clearly not in contention, and they're not – the expectations are out the window. Are they going to let him learn on the job? Are they going to go after get another manager like a Joe Girardi?
No. What they're going to do is – I mean, Jeff Wilpon at one point was paying like three guys not to manage – or three guys not to GM. I think Steve Phillips and Omar were both on the payroll.
Now he's three GMs to pay now.
Yeah, so I don't think they're going to do that anymore. They're always crying poverty. I don't see them paying this guy off and saying, you know, go to Florida or whatever the hell. No, I think they're going to stick it out with him for a while, because there's no self-assessment in the Mets organization, all right? They never assessed it. If they truly assessed the team, they would say, we have to tear this down. The window is closed for this team. It didn't work. We tried it with these guys. We got to get rid of all of them. They would trade away Cabrera. They would trade Jay Bruce. They would trade Todd Frazier.
Yeah.
They would release Jose Reyes. All this would happen between now and July 31st.
They need they have no vision right now. They're all over the place.
And they would say, listen, guys, this is what we're going to do. We're going to rebuild. We're going to restock our farm system. And please, you know, expect us to do better in 2020.
Exactly.
That's what you would do.
That's what I think a lot of fans, we want to put another poll out there, a lot of fans would embrace
a rebuild.
Absolutely.
As the Yankee fans did, which I never expected, and I wrote it a million times, they would never tolerate rebuilding in the Bronx. Guess what? Not only did they tolerate it, they welcomed it,
and it
paid dividends.
The only difference is the Yankees had, you know, Aaron Judge, and they had Sanchez. Well, they had a lot of exciting parts.
But that's why the Mets have to replenish that farm system. They don't have anybody down there like that.
Yeah.
So that's why you maybe have to dump off Jacob deGrom. I say you hold on to Syndergaard because he's young and he's under team control for a couple more years.
Yeah, younger.
But, man, you move to Grom and get the best prospects you can, man, and start rebuilding.
Yes, the Yankees are 30 games over, and they are in a decent spot, three games back as we record this. The Mets are not playing as well, and they have a lot
not
of
even
issues.
Talking
you know,
about.
Clearly we're not talking about anything that goes on the field. We're talking about the triumphant in the front office and everything that's going on with the trade deadline and Mickey Callaway. So, something to keep your eye on, but we got to get to our guest for the show. He is the MLB Network. He is the one and only Brian Kenny. Here he is.
Well, Dan, I love our next guest. Even though he's a stats nerd extraordinaire, believes it can reduce everything, the beauty of baseball, down to a number, and also wrote a book trashing all the dinosaur baseball writers, of which I assume I'm one of them, but I still love the guy. He's a boxing guy, he's a baseball guy, and he's carved out his own niche in this game. Brian Kenny of the MLB Network, also the author of Ahead of the Curve, which is a thought-provoking book, I will say, even if it infuriates you at times, as it did me. Brian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Wally, it's always good to talk to you. And by the way, like my wife asked me when I was writing the book, she said, aren't all these sports writers going to hate you? And I said, no, none of them will think it's about them. They all think I'm talking about somebody else.
See, I thought you were talking about me all the way.
No, I was talking about everybody else, not you. No, you. No.
Yeah, I don't know enough for you to have included me in there. Anyway, Brian, you know, it's the time of year where we start talking about the end-of-season awards, our mid-season awards, and obviously a lot of trade talk as well. But I want to start you off with one really intriguing award to me is the NL Cy Young. You know, and I see Jacob deGrom quite a bit because I've been covering the Mets for the New York Times this year. And, I mean, here's a guy with a 5-4 record. I know that you're going to tell me that's not important, but his ERA is like 1.68. At this point, I would have to think he's the front runner for the NL Cy Young.
Yeah, I mean, we're splitting hairs. I looked at it last night because DeGrom was pitching. I was doing MLB Tonight. And, you know, it comes down to you make park adjustments, and you also see how many innings the guy has pitched. I'd go with DeGrom. Believe it or not, Wally, like as much as I'm – you know, kill the win and everything else, and there are these now sophisticated measurements for pitching, you know, quality of pitch, measuring the break in the pitch, there's the velocity, there's opponent's ex-woba.
What is that?
Quality of contact. Yeah,
wow.
Opponent's ex-woba is where it's at. Well, give an example now.
You're
now
so far ahead. You're like NASA, and we're like still fooling around like, you know, like little balsa wood gliders.
Well, here's where you could use it, because now, not that long ago, you might remember that, like, fielding independent pitching came to the fore, mm-hmm. right? And it was that, and the theory is that you don't control the ball once it's hit. The things that you control are the strikeouts, the walks, and the home runs. And it was pretty reliable for a long time. Now we're at the point where pitchers have stopped walking guys. You know, like pitchers have stopped working like Al Leiter or Tom Glavine saying, I won't give in to the guy. If I walk him, I walk him. And that was the case for, like, I don't know, 70, 80 years of pitching.
Right.
Like, if you have to walk a guy, walk him. Stay away from him. Now, like, everyone is so obsessed. And this happened naturally where, hey, don't walk guys. Don't put guys on. Oh, those bases on balls. They always kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole training of pitchers was don't walk guys. Don't give guys free bases.
That's right.
Where you get killed. So now we have guys, what I call, you'll like this, the Phil Hughes effect, where you have 10 strikeouts, one walk, which used to mean dominated,
right.
You give up five runs.
And five home runs, probably.
Yeah, he gave up a lot of
right.
home runs.
So you think, so now there's a thing called opponent's expected weighted on base.
Oh,
and all
Lord.
That is measuring the quality of contact against you. And I'll give you an example. Like, a guy who would have an off-the-chart, this has got to be anti-fit. A guy would have an off-the-chart, we can't measure it now, but expected, you know, opponent's expected WOBA
mm-hmm.
would be Greg Maddux. You know, Greg Maddux, where you would see, hey, I saw with my own eyes, you know, in the game he hit, there were eight tappers right back to him.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are getting bad swings, bad contact, weak ground balls. That's all that is. So there's something that sounds complicated, and all it means is a guy who induces weak contact should be rewarded. Anyway, long way to go to say that ERA still tells you most of the story. Not all of it, but a good part of it. I think you're responsible for the runs you allow. You should get credit for the innings that you throw. I would go DeGrom slightly, not much, because Scherzer has a few more innings. Aaron Nola is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make the arc adjustment, Aaron Nola needs a little more credit. It's razor close, but I go DeGrom slightly.
Is the flaw in ERA the fact that, you know, you can leave a game with a runner on base and then the inherited runner scores as a result of something the relief pitcher does and you get stuck with the run?
Well, you know what? I think it's even bigger than that. I mean, that happens, and that's kind of a lot. That sticks with you. But the biggest thing is the quality of your defense. I believe there's a wider variance in defense than we think. And you can witness the guys with the Chicago Cubs pitching the last few years, Kyle Hendricks, John Lester, where when you have a superior defense, now we all know it makes a difference. It's not like,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the 70s when guys were writing about baseball, they didn't know this. They knew it. But to what extent? And I think it's bigger than we think. So there's lots of noise in the ERA. And yet, we're playing a game. If a ball is struck, and no matter what your defense can do or can't do, if you're giving up runs, you're giving up runs. So it's not perfect. You can make adjustments come Cy Young time, and we should do that and really look at everything we can. But your ERA, it lies sometimes, but it's still telling you a good part of the story.
Now, Brian, it's Dan Canobi here. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Going across town to the Yankees, it's Sonny Gray. We saw him in his last start at Baltimore pitch very well, maybe one of his best starts of the year. No runs, six innings, a bunch of strikeouts. But a big reason, and I've seen this being written a lot, is that Sonny Gray needs to get back to his roots, needs to get back to why he was successful with the A's. And that was when he was throwing his fastball a lot more and he was throwing his curveball, kind of like dumbing down his repertoire because the guy's got, you know, 4 to 5 pitches. You know, your guy looks at the numbers. Do you see that for Sonny Gray? Should he be sticking with his fastball and his curve, or a lot of the times these guys get a little too, you know, into all their pitches?
Well, yeah, look, it's still a craft. You know, it's really an art form. And now it's a real war of information. So, like, what we found is that, well, just Sonny Gray have great velocity to begin with. Like, if you look at a guy with that size and his velocity, you
mm-hmm.
would think, okay, I don't have high hopes for this guy.
Right.
Obviously has done enough with his craft to put him in this position. However, it's a real – that's where I think, guys, it's the game has changed the most. And this is the forefront of analytics now, where it's very scouty. It's very into – there are pitch designers for clubs now, and those guys are, besides the pitching coaches, they're pitching coaches, but now there are designers who will use their baseball ops department just to look at what pitches are being thrown, and when they're being thrown, the sequence and the effective velocity. You know, Stephen, going, if you're pitching up, you're pitching down, where the guy's hot zones are, where the cold zones are, like where a guy is good, and attacking the best possible way.
Is there a danger of over-analyzing these things? I mean, you got guys basically designing how the pitchers are thrown in each at-bat. I mean, is there a danger of overdoing this and taking the pitcher out of his instinctive ability?
No question. I think when you probably would have a pitcher at a certain point where, like, if you talk to any pitcher, Wally, you talk to all these guys. And
right.
I constantly work with these ex-major leaguers, with Al Leiter and John Smoltz, and they're always, their inner computer is very sophisticated. It's like, you know, our brains are much more sophisticated than any computer. So when a pitcher who is experienced, who's been out there and successful, if you actually asked him, why did you throw this pitch then? He would give you such a complicated answer. Like, hey, I threw this then, knew he was looking at it, I wanted to change his sight line, I changed the speed because he saw a fastball like that in the third inning, I know he was waiting for that fastball, but I gave him the fastball on the inner part, but it was a little higher, or it was a little slower, but I pulled the straight. It's not like it's, oh, I figure I'd throw the curveball. No, it's actually sophisticated. But
For many years, baseball worked that way. I threw him the curveball because I knew he couldn't hit it. You know, it was as simple as that.
But you'd have to set it up. Like, you knew.
Yeah.
You not just threw the curveball. You would say, hey, I threw the fastball in.
Right.
I threw the curveball away. I threw it. You know, so actually, to your point, can you get too cute with it? Yes, you can get too robotic with it. But a pitcher at his best, whether it's Pedro or Al Leiter or any of these guys I work with, when they're talking about it, their sequencing in their head is actually quite sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a guy like Sonny Gray that you say, hey, wait a second, you might not be aware of what's working or what's not working. Let's help make you aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes that helps and sometimes that hurts. But again, you know, we're operating in the real world here.
Now, what goes behind the fact that I see this a lot, that the Yankee pitchers, they throw the least amount of fastballs of any pitching staff in the major leagues. There's so much reliance on the off-speed stuff. You look at their staff. Tanaka throws a lot of splitters. Herman throws a lot of off-speed stuff. Obviously, Sabathia is throwing less and less of the fastball. You know, what goes beyond that? Because that's not just is that a league-wide thing, or is that something that, you know, Larry Rothschild and the powers that be, the pitching designers that you spoke of, is that something that they're designing?
League-wide. That is league-wide. That is something that actually, 2 years ago, by the time we got to the World Series, the Cubs and Indians had basically stopped throwing fastballs. Because they both had sophisticated baseball ops departments, very smart coaching.
And great pitching staffs.
And great pitching. But they also were like, hey, don't throw fastballs. Guess what? Hitters hit fastballs. They just hit them better.
Right.
Now I'm extrapolating on that. Probably you use your fastball for the wipeout pitch. Mm-hmm. You might strike a guy out on the fastball after throwing all that.
It's like the opposite.
So again, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, but they used to call that pitching backwards, didn't they?
Right. That's what I mean. So it was done, but now it's like, wait a second, are you going far enough? And so guys will catch up to fastballs. Guys will hit that do damage to fastballs. So what the whole league now is doing is throwing fewer of them. Now, in any case, you might get to a Sonny Gray where, hey, Sonny, that works for everybody else. It's on the by and large. It doesn't work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so for anybody, it could be, hey, that works for everybody. However, what works for you? Mm-hmm. That's the trick.
All right, so we know Sonny is not going to win the AL Cy Young, but there is a pretty close race, I would think, between Verlander and Luis Severino. Who do you like at this moment, if the season ended today?
I think I would still, again, I haven't studied it. At last check, I think I'd still go Verlander. It really comes down to innings, how deep you go, and then how many runs you allow.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look and see how the defense has changed, especially the Yankees. They have a new left side of their defense, their infield defense, with Andujar there, and make the comparison. But it really comes down to, how many runs you're allowing, how many innings are you pitching.
Mm-hmm.
My sense is that it would be Verlander. But in a lot of these things, it comes down to, if down the stretch a guy gives up a five spot or has two games where he's not crushed but just gives up a couple of runs, for a while, three-quarters of the Astros' rotation had a sub-2 ERA.
Right.
You know, so we're talking historically great. I think Verlander is also, I don't get into, leading his team and this and that, but Verlander has been the most reliable guy over the last 2 years. I mean, he's just in the playoffs too, extremely reliable. I know that's kind of...
So are you factoring in his full body of work?
No, when it comes to Cy Cy Young time. I'm looking at this season.
You're looking at, yeah, what's happening now. I mean, right now, Severino is sub-2. Sub-2 ERA.
But where's Verlander now?
I think he's like slightly over 2, like 2.12 or something like that. I mean, yeah, they're close. I mean, it's neck and neck.
Right.
You know.
And then you make the park adjustment, and then you look at the innings pitched, and then the next thing, again, I don't have it in front of me, the next thing I'd be looking at, you know, is the quality of the defense behind you. You know, and you deserve more of a break. And the ballpark is going to be different. Houston's pretty offensive. So is Yankee Stadium.
Oh, very much so. Sure.
More.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they both deserve credit for that. And then at a certain point, then if you have to get like a tie break, it's quality of opposition.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Severino probably has tougher competition.
He has had in the first half, but I think the second half, the Yankees get a pretty easy ride.
Right. So you have that. And then you have a number of strikeouts. You know, again, that's not even just a tiebreak.
It's ridiculous. You know, I just called up the numbers. Let me tell you how ridiculously close they are, okay? Severino's 13-2, 1.98 ERA, 138 strikeouts, 29 walks, and 118 and one-third innings. Verlander is 9-4, 2.12 ERA, 144 strikeouts, 22 walks, and 118 and two-thirds innings. So, I mean,
identical.
It's like it's almost, you know, it's basically a coin flip.
Yeah, no, that's what it is. I mean, we're splitting hairs. We're not going to get a perfect answer.
No.
End of the year, you then try to make your best, you know, choice. And again, it seems like even the run prevention would be the strikeouts seem pretty even.
Yeah.
The innings are very close. And it comes down to which ballpark, you know, is better to hit in. I think that's probably close. I think Houston is also a very offensive park, but it's close.
Now, Brian, let's move over to another topic that's very controversial, so that means that you have a strong opinion on it, and that is the shift. I don't know if you saw this article written from Jerry Krasnick in ESPN.com. I thought it was fascinating because he interviewed Kyle Seager, Matt Carpenter, Daniel Murphy, obviously all left-handed batters and all batters that have been victimized by the shift. And all three of them, and keep in mind they're interviewed separately, all three of these guys pretty much said the same exact thing, which is the reason I found it so fascinating, is that a walk or a single pretty much does nothing anymore. So they're not going to lay down that bunt. They're not going to try to beat the shift with a single between the 5-6 hole, because that, therefore, they say that they're relying on their teammates to get them home from first. And something that Daniel Murphy said that really stuck out to me was that if you hit a single, where is it? You drop a bunt down, I'm stuck at first base, so what I've done is ask our ball club to get two more singles. I've asked someone else to hit a double. A lot of those guys said that I'm relying on my teammates. So with all that being said, where do you stand on the shift?
Yeah, I hear that. And I know they also said, hey, it's not that easy just to lay down a bunt. How often am I going to be successful?
Mm-hmm.
I hear all that, but I'm not buying. I'm sorry. You know, if put yourself in the hands of the defense. Say you're the defensive team and you're shifting. If I'm shifting, you know, drastically on two left-handers and they bunt all day long, I tell you what, I'm extremely uncomfortable. Mm. And I'm thinking I have to get out of it. Because if I suddenly have Daniel Murphy and I don't know if it's Bryce Harper, whoever, if it's the two of them and they are on base 3 out of 4 times, both of them, that's a problem. It's a real problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not doing damage to me, but they're not creating outs. Again, offense is about not making an out. And so, yeah, I would say if you are, let's say you were Bryce Harper. Oh, let me try to pick somebody. How about your Mike Moustakas on the Royals, right? You're their one good hitter.
Right.
Okay. Moustakas bunting and getting on first just doesn't do much for Ned Yost. However, if you're in the Nationals lineup and those two guys I just said, they're on base 3 out of 4 times by bunting, getting on easy, I've got a real decision to make, and I think I'm pulling out of the shift.
He said it's really difficult to get 3 hits in 1 inning. That's what he said. And he said 7% of balls on the ground go for extra bases.
But I have a fundamental disagreement.
Getting on base is damaging. Yeah, they're wrong. They're wrong. You're not making it. It's like walking.
I have a fundamental disagreement with Murphy. I mean, there's so much value placed on base percentage and getting base runners. Why would you pass up an easy base?
Correct.
You've heard that for years.
Yep.
I mean, I covered Mark Teixeira for 7 years, and every single day we asked him, why don't you try to hit the ball the other way? And he'd say, they don't pay me to do that. They pay me to hit home runs, and that's what I'm going to do. So he stubbornly hit into the shift, and you saw his average. And I know you're not a proponent of the batting average, but it is a measurement of something, and we just saw it plummet over the last 3-4 years of his career.
Yeah, no question. And also, you're not just bunting because, hey, I'm going to bunt forever. Eventually, you're pulling the defense out of it.
You're right.
If you think about playing defense where, hey, Big Poppy or Mark Teixeira or whoever just went 3-for-4, and on a weekend series, they're 3-for-4 three straight days. You can't afford that. You have to come out of it. You're getting them out of the shift, and now you can play straight up.
Well, you know, this takes me to a pretty fundamental question. You know, we joke about it with the Yankee fans, but is there too much emphasis on the home run these days? I mean, is everybody – and listen, I'm not saying home runs are bad. Home runs are the best thing you can do in baseball. There's no doubt about it. But is there too much emphasis institutionally on hitting home runs?
No question. That's the dynamic of the game, and for this, Wally, you can blame me and my ilk.
See?
You know, these are the ball players properly understanding what works in the market, right? In the baseball world, understanding
right.
what's best to score runs,
and also to get paid. Let's not forget.
Yeah. Incentives are all there, and listen. Incentives, like, what are the incentives now for any young kid, any 12, 13-year-old who's out there? What that kid will learn every step of the way is hit for power and throw hard.
Yep.
And everything else is nonsense. And we can say, oh, we like the guy who hits the other way, and we like the guy who can field and picks up his teammates. Yeah, we do. And who do we promote, and who gets scholarships, and
right.
who gets paid? The guy that throws hard and hits far.
Well, Ralph Kiner knew this 70 years ago. I mean, you know, the famous
yeah.
quote, home run hitters drive Cadillacs, and date Elizabeth
right.
Taylor. I mean, you know, this is not new.
And so now, right, but it was one thing when there was a couple of Ralph Kiners and just a couple of Adam
right.
Dunn. Now we have a whole league of them.
It's amazing.
Is it good for baseball? No. And I was always the guy arguing with all, you know, my ex-colleagues at ESPN and saying, Adam Dunn is a great player. He walks 100 times a year, he hits 40 home runs. And they're like, he stinks, he hits 215. I'm like, no, he's very productive. But you know what? I didn't want a whole league of Adam Dunn. I want more Rod Carews and a few Adam Dunns now.
All right, well, you know, you bring me to another point now. You know, we talk about NL MVP. I think Bryce Harper is hitting below 220. But can you make a case that he is in the running for that award?
No, not now. No, because he's only slugging 480.
Okay.
Like, if you can, you know, he's just not hitting for enough power. I was actually talking about this because, like, a guy like Javi Baez, like, how extreme can we go and still be effective? And I really think, like, you brought up batting average. And as much as I've worked hard to de-emphasize batting average for all these years, you're right. It means something. And I don't think you can be an effective offensive player hitting under, say, 220
mm-hmm.
or be a very good player. Like, at a certain point, like, the extreme would be, and it was Javi Baez for a while, but his on-base went up. If you're on base, like, I don't care if you're slugging 550, which Baez was. At one point, Javi Baez of the Cubs was slugging 550, and his on base was 295. You know, he's an extreme Alfonso Soriano,
mm-hmm.
who is already extreme. At a certain point, that guy's just not very valuable. I mean, he's good, and you know, power is always good, but it's not like he's an all-star or an MVP candidate. You need to hit, even in this day and age, your batting average, you have to be able to hit a little bit. Like, you can't have 140 walks and 35 homers and still hit 200 and be outstanding. You're just not.
Yeah. I mean, but you know what? We could talk about batting average all day long. But, you know, you look at a guy like Giancarlo Stanton, who, you know, early in the year, Yankee fans hated him and wanted to send him back to Miami. Now he's heating up a bit. I mean, make me a case for me that he is a valuable addition to the Yankees lineup at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Stanton, even at his worst, it's funny because, you know, I'm looking at the whole league all the time.
Right.
So I took a look and I said, and this is I looked at Stanton's numbers when he looked lost, like when he was striking out
right.
five times a game. Remember, he had a few of those, and I was like, wow.
And I covered him. I know. I was there, and he was not happy to talk about it afterward, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And he looked terrible, and he wasn't getting the results. And yet, you know what? He was still above league average in his hitting. His OPS plus, which is park adjusted, and 100 is league average. At his worst, he was like 105.
Wow.
I mean, there are guys in the league, whether it's, you know, like Andrew McCutchen a few years ago or Bryce Harper now, really good players. These are superstar players
mm-hmm.
who, when they slump, they really slump.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just gone. So Stanton has had a mediocre first half, and he's still like you know, he's an all-star candidate. He was in the final five votes.
Sure.
He's like a legitimate all-star. So at his worst, he's still a very good player. And by the way, he's not great this first half. I agree with you. He hasn't been.
Yeah.
But he's still, he's so productive.
The one thing that makes me laugh, though, is that people seem to assume that, you know, last year he had a historically good July and August. And people seem to think that he will
he'll
repeat it. You know, well, he's right on track to where he was last year, except last year he had 18 home runs in August, which is not normal.
Right. And you don't know. However, there is, you know, again, it's part of like whether you want to go old school and say the guy will play to the back of his baseball card, or you want to call it regression to the mean.
Mm.
A guy will normally revert to what he is. You give him enough reps. And again,
I do agree with that because you see it over and over again.
Just give him his reps. Now, there are extenuating circumstances. He started with the Yankees. If we're not thinking about this now because it's 90 degrees, it's hot, you know, everything, you know, it's a typical beautiful summer in New York. But in April, do you remember what that was like?
Oh, it was awful. It was awful.
In concert. So to expect a guy to come up, have the immediate pressure, and we know in baseball, immediate pressure is bad.
Yeah.
You know, you really do have to relax.
Yeah.
So if you're not relaxed and you're frozen every day, and then you start to struggle. Well,
and plus you're in a new city, and you know, I got him to grudgingly acknowledge this last week, and I said to him, you know, just the fact that you had all these adjustments to make, new city, new league, new teammates, you know, do you think that had an effect? And he said, yes, it did, but I'm not going to say that was the only reason. And I thought that was at least a grudging admission that this was not an easy move.
Yeah, he doesn't want – nobody wants to admit it because then while he did
– But it's normal. Yeah, it's human.
Difficult. Right. Then it would be the headlines. Stanton blames New York.
What? We would do a thing like that. Are you serious? Of course we would.
No. Oh, never.
Brian, I want to get your thoughts on the hottest topic right now in New York, and that's Manny Machado coming to the Yankees. There's strong offers out there. What are your thoughts on this? And maybe can you call up Brian Cashman and tell him not to do this, please?
When I heard this first, I thought, yeah, I mean, you gotta be on the phone and listen and inquire.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm Brian Cashman, I'm not interested. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but renting Manny Machado, even getting Manny Machado long term with the emergence of Torres and Duhar, having Didi Gregorius.
Didi, yeah.
I'm done.
Thank you.
That's the end game.
I would agree. So do you think he's trying to drive up the price? By feigning interest in this, maybe.
Maybe. You know, it's possible. And, you know, maybe that's that's really Machiavellian.
well, he's done this before.
He is Machiavellian, and I say that with all due admiration, believe me.
Or he's trying to show other GMs that I've moved on from the pitchers. I moved on from focusing on pitching. Now I'm going after
more
offense.
But I think he needs pitching, don't you, Brian?
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, and it's like how much – but look, you have Miguel Andujar. Like, say he's a shortstop, but don't care. The defensive metrics don't lie that much. Defensive metrics say Machado is the worst defensive shortstop in the game. Now, maybe that's not completely true. Maybe the metrics are a little spunky now because you're playing so many different
gems. You know, Jeter used to love it when we pointed that out to him.
Oh, yes. So, but the thing is, the defensive metrics, I'll say, love him at third because he's great at third. Mm. So, all right, but if I'm the Yankees and I say, a 23-year-old rookie slugging 500. And he's taught, like, before you even get into club control, cheap and bumpers. Unfortunately, that's the way the game. How you foundation? I'm not messing with the infield. And Machado makes you how much better over the course of.
Well, that's I mean, they're so good offensively already. What do you need him for?
Yes, right now. Again, normally I don't believe that, Wally, but in this case I do because I'm saying I got a third baseman slugging 500. I've got Gregorius, who plays good defensively at shortstop, much better than Machado, and his offense is good enough. And then I have – I'm done.
Well, do you think that maybe they're thinking of if they pick him up, spinning off one of the young players for a pitcher, a better pitcher than they could get, you know, with just minor league prospects?
You could be right, but, again, I would not be interested in that. Like, again, the win is when you get Chris Bryant, Corey Seager, and you get a – blue chipper who delivers, and he's 23 years old, and you're paying him $600,000, and he's standing out there day after day. That's your foundation. down.
Well, it's similar to trading Aroldis Chapman for Gleyber Torres and then getting Chapman back.
Machiavellian, yeah. Right there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I don't buy the, hey, I know a lot of guys at MLB Tonight have quoted, hey, well, you get like that Mark McGwire effect. You know, he went to St. Louis and he loved St. Louis and he stayed. I think Manny Machado goes for, and I'm not blaming him, this is what we all do, he goes for the most money. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you know, when they're negotiating, if the Yankees come up with $300 million and the Dodgers come up with $310 million, he's not staying in New York.
Of course not.
In LA.
So, yeah.
So so as far as, hey, we get him in New York and he'll realize, hey, this is a really nice city, I think he's aware of that already.
Yeah.
Make him more liable to stick around.
You know, Brian, we've had you on for a long time here, and we appreciate it, but I got two quick questions for you, okay? Should the Mets trade Jacob deGrom? That's one. And B, or two, is who is your AL MVP right now? Mike Trout, who is playing for a last place or, you know, struggling team, or a guy like Mookie Betts who's playing for a first place team?
Or J.D.?
Or J.D. is right.
The last player, I go for the best player, I don't care.
So, all right, so you throw out the V in there.
No, I know how to, you know, how to use the dictionary. It's the most valuable player. Don't worry about what his teammates are doing. Yeah, so I isolate the player's production. So it's Mike Trout.
Basically player of the year for you. See, I always get hung up on, you know, they could have finished in last place without Mike Trout.
Yeah, I would prefer my MVP to be, you know, Ken Boyer, who leads the Cardinals to the pennant, you know, and is on the best team.
Yeah.
I'd like it to work that way, but I'm not holding it against the best player in the game that his pitching staff did not pitch well.
I got you. But I always like try to say, if I took this guy out of the lineup, where would this team be?
Yeah.
You know, are they the same team? Well, the Angels are the same team without Mike Trout. They're just not as interesting without him.
Yeah, but again, who's the best? I go for the player.
Okay. All right, so DeGrom, if you're the Mets three-headed monster GM right now, do you trade Jacob DeGrom?
I don't know. That's tough to do in the real world. If you get cold-blooded and ruthless, you trade DeGrom, you trade Syndergaard, and you work toward your championship team of 2021.
Yeah, don't you have to tear down to the foundation in Queens at this point?
Yeah, and also you have some good young players. You know, in Nimmo, Conforto, maybe Rosario, guys that do, and you build from your young guys, and you say, well, we thought this would work, it didn't, and you move on.
Right. I mean, I think the window is closed for that team as far as I'm concerned. And you didn't mention Tebow. He's going to be the savior. And on that note, we're going to let you go. Brian, thanks so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure having you on.
No, always good. Hey, well, now that
Okay. Yep. Okay. Absolutely, man. Thanks, buddy.
That's a big concession. All right.
Yes, I know it is. I'm very, very proud of that. Thank you. Brian Kenny of the MLB Network. Get his book, Ahead of the Curve. Good. It's definitely worth reading. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I also have to mention, before we say, you can watch Brian on MLB Now, weekdays 4 p.m. throughout the
show season.
Plus, Brian will be part of MLB Network's extensive on-site All-Star coverage in D.C., as we just talked about.
You know what I like about Brian is that, you know, look, he's got his own views, and he can be rigid sometimes in terms of numbers, but he is willing to hear opposing viewpoints. And I do think he thinks deeply about these things, and I think that he's actually put a lot of coherent thought into this. I don't agree with, you know, the complete theory of just reducing the game to a number, but I do see the value of a lot of his points.
He wasn't nearly as combative as I thought he was.
No, he was great.
He was awesome, and I've obviously got to know him over the years working at MLB and in the boxing scene. He's usually, you know, he's calling big fights, and he's you know, he's been around boxing for a very long time. But you know what? I've gone into a lot of watching his show, and you just want to, like, I think he does it on purpose. Like, he likes to drive like
he's provocative.
He likes to drive like the Harold Reynolds up the wall. Like, I think that when they originally started that show, MLB Now, they originally wanted to pit it with Harold versus Brian Kenny. You know, old school, I'll tell you what I see. I don't need numbers. He looks like a good ball player. He is. And you got BK on the other side. It was like, no. Here's the shredder. You
know? Right.
So, I mean,
it makes for good television, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it was interesting stuff. It was a very good discussion about some of the topics that are going on in baseball. And I always like to get different viewpoints. And, And Brian Kenny's one of the most thought-provoking guys out there today. But I want to ask you now, Wallace Matthews, now that you here, some of your midseason awards so far. I have them written here. We heard from Brian Kenny, so now I want to hear from you. Who is your AL MVP?
All right, well, let me just start by saying that Brian and I look at it differently. He goes with best player. Now, if the award was called Player of the Year, you know, I'd say it's Mike Trout. You know,
it's like the LeBron James effect. Like, LeBron James should win the MVP in the NBA every single year.
Yeah, but, you know, it's that word value. And I know he puts a different spin on the word value than I do. You know, and a lot of times the sabermetrics guys will go by war. And they'll say, well, he's got the highest war, which means he's the most valuable. Because there's a dollar figure that they go with. Each point of war is worth like $8 million. So if your war is 6.0, you know, in theory, your value is $48 million.
That's the thing a lot of fans don't think about, and it's like, who cares about an all-star snub? Who cares about, you know, these postseason awards? But the way these contracts are constructed, you get, you know, X amount of dollars for every vote you get in the MVP. You get X amount of dollars.
That's
for
a whole. Now you're opening a whole new can of worms with me. You really are.
But you don't care about that.
No, not at all. And I'll tell you why.
The reason why players are so.
Oh, I know, because they have incentives, of course, and I don't blame them. But the all-star game is a game for the fans. Mm-hmm. They should change it. Don't call it the All-Star game. Call it the fans' choice game.
Do you make a big thing of the snubs and stuff? Do you get No,
I feel, you know, look, I feel bad for the players to whom it's important, but I tell you what, I've known a lot of players who welcome those 4 days off and don't want to go.
Yeah, so Stanton didn't get the fan vote. He lost out to Gene Segura because the Seattle
and rightfully so
has a lot more time on their
hands. Gene Segura's having a great year, brother.
I always say this, that whenever it comes down to a final vote, New York is a big city, but we have things to do. No one's going to sit there and stuff the ballot box for Stanton. So I'm wondering in the back of my mind, does Stanton really care if he's at the All-Star game?
Probably not.
Last year it was held in Miami, and he had to be like the face of it. And, you know, it took a toll on him, and he had to go all the – not that this is bad.
He said he would never be in the Home Run Derby again.
Same thing with judges. So I kind of think like he's going to go to a nice island, right?
Of course.
He's going to go to the beach. He's going to hang out. But that's
the
story
one thing
for
about baseball, it's a relentless schedule. You play every damn day.
Right.
And it's tiring. And now in the middle of the season, you have a chance to take 4 days off. I mean, I understand if you're a young player and it's like a big deal to go to the All-Star game. But if you're a veteran, I mean, it was a running joke with Mariano Rivera every year. The guy would go on the DL the last weekend before the All-Star break so that he wouldn't have to go.
It's like when he would show up at spring training like 3 weeks late and throw a nine-pitch inning with all nine strikes.
Yeah, okay, I'm ready to go. He wouldn't even – the joke with Mariano was he didn't even have a pair of gray pants in spring training because he never went on the road.
Mariano's not getting on a bus.
No, never went on the road.
He's not going to Clearwater to play the Phillies.
Yeah, so the point here is that – you know, the All-Star game is really – it's a wonderful thing if you're a young player and you want the exposure and it's a thrill and all. But for a veteran guy and you're playing 150 games a year, those 4 days are pretty damn valuable.
And with that being said, my AL MVP is J.D. Martinez.
Okay, very good. I was going to say Mookie Betts because I think that, you know, he's a game changer for them. But obviously J.D. Martinez is a – is a very valid pick.
What a great signing for them.
Yeah, it really was.
If you look at what both teams did, you know, the arms race that is Yankees versus Red Sox, and the Yankees added Stanton, and the Red Sox responded by getting J.D. Martinez to a much better deal. It's the three-year, was it a five-year deal with three
options? It's for $110 million.
He's getting $25 million this year. He can opt out after 2 years. He's got 28 home runs.
Look,
he's got
we're like all experts in hindsight. RBIs. Yeah, but it looks like the Red Sox definitely outplayed the Yankees on that
one. Yeah, so that's my AL MVP. NL MVP for me is Jesus Aguilar. I know he's not a household name.
Yeah, I know. You were telling me that.
Plays for the Brewers. This guy kind of burst onto the scene last year. He hit 15 home runs in like 150 games or something, 300 at-bats. He hit 15 home runs last year. But this year, he's got 20 at the All-Star break. He's on a first-place team. The NL pool here is kind of weak. It's like Markakis or Matt Kemp or Nolan Arenado.
I'm going Freddie Freeman, and I'll tell you why. The Braves are supposed to be rebuilding this year.
Yeah.
And they're winning the division. So, you know, I mean, and he's the number one player on a team that is overperforming. So, to me, that's value.
Yeah, so the NL is going to be wide open. That's a race that people are going to keep their eyes on as we go down the stretch. Mm-hmm. AL Cy Young, I'm biased here. Luis Severino.
I'm not biased, and I'm saying Severino because, you know, as we spoke about with Brian Kenny a few minutes ago, his numbers with Verlander are just about equal. Mm-hmm. And his ERA is, you know, slightly lower. 1.98 ERA. To have a sub-2 ERA at the All-Star break is pretty damn good.
So these are obviously our first-half awards. But this isn't what we think is going to be the Cy Young. But do you think that Severino edges out Verlander?
Well, it all depends on what happens in the second half.
We brought up the schedule.
I understand that, but if the numbers you know, continue the way they are. And I know, listen, don't forget, the people who vote for the Cy Young are not only the Brian Kennys of the world. They're also the older guys who value wins.
Right.
Severino at this point is 13-2.
That's a question I have for you, and it's something I wanted to ask Brian Kenny. We just couldn't get to it. Is if you looked at the pool of voters and you looked at the demographics of it, and you would know this better than I would, what is it? Like, is it more of the older generation, or is it more of the younger guys that value
all
these metrics?
It all depends. You know, it's a rotating thing. Each city, you know, one beat writer in each city is given a vote. You know, one guy gets one for the Cy Young Award. One guy gets one for the MVP. Yeah.
So not every – you don't vote for everything?
No. I've had, you know, a vote for the MVP. I've had a vote for Manager of the Year. I've had a vote for the Cy Young. It depends. Like, every year it kind of rotates. So you don't know who it's going to be at any point. But clearly, you know, you're going to get some older school guys who will say – well, I'm giving it to the guy with the most wins, right? And you can have other guys, newer guys like Brian Kenny, who are going to say, you know, I'm going with XFIP or whatever that other thing he came up with.
Pitching designers. That was the one I was like, whoa.
And they're both valid ways of evaluating, but it does skew the way you vote. Now, honestly, at this point, you know, I understand that the win is in some ways, you know, not a real indicator of how good a pitcher is. But if a guy like Severino, if he wins 25 games or 22 games and has, you know, an ERA of around
he's
two,
he's got to win it.
How do you not give it to him?
I mean, Verlander had that crazy year. Was it 2011? He won the MVP and the Cy Young. He was like 25-3.
Right.
With not an ERA even close to what Severino has.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. In the NL, I think that Met fans will be happy to hear this, and I don't think it's any much of a surprise. I think DeGrom will win it.
That's going to be a real upset, and I'll tell you why. He's only 5-4, and this guy will not win 10 games this year.
But does it matter? Because a few years ago, Felix Hernandez, and that was like the tipping point. That was like the sabermetrics big win for them. They were, you know, throwing parades in their basements.
That's the precedent. That's the precedent that they would have to rely on. I mean, you know, you can go back to
12 wins that year.
Well, here's the way the game has changed. In 1971, I always go back to this, all right, Tom Seaver had a 1.76 ERA in 35 starts, okay? 21 complete games, 4 shutouts.
You can't do this, though.
And he did not win the Cy Young. You know
totally
why?
Different
do you
metrics.
Know why he didn't win the Cy Young?
Why?
Because he was 20-10, and Ferguson Jenkins was 24-13.
I mean, those numbers are just asinine. So what just doesn't exist anymore.
I understand that. But Jenkins' ERA was a full run higher than Seaver's. But back in those days, the number of wins pretty much determined it.
Well, do you think that – I think that now the ERA is taking over wins in terms of
– I agree.
Now, if his ERA is still hovering around under 2 come September, late September, he's got to win it. And if Scherzer – I don't care if Scherzer is like a 2-4 and he's got 19 wins. And if DeGrom has 11 wins and he has a 1-6, I think it should go to DeGrom.
Well, I'll just say this to you. I've covered about half a dozen of DeGrom starts this year. He's terrific. He's the best pitcher I've seen in both leagues, including Severino. If the precedent hadn't been set – with Felix, I think he was 13-12 the year he won his Cy Young. I would say he had no chance because he's only going to win 8 or 9 games this year. However, the precedent has been set, and I think now it will be okay for certain guys to vote. You know, guys who may have been hung up on wins in the past may vote for him this year. I think
who
he should win.
You? So DeGrom?
Oh, DeGrom.
Okay, let's go to the Rookie of the Year, Glaber, in the AL. Even though he's out, it's pretty much going to come down to him and
Ohtani.
Ohtani.
Well, it's not going to be Ohtani.
Well, he's still hitting.
Yeah, but
I watched him hit a rocket the other night on a pinch hit home run.
I saw that.
That thing was like
was
a 5 iron. Jeez.
Yeah, but I think Glaber at this point, because he's an everyday player, you know, Tani at this point is going to be a DH the rest of the year. I think Glaber's pulled ahead of him. And you know what? He's a damn good candidate. Now, in the NL, I must say I haven't seen a lot of guys, but I like Acuna very much.
It's pretty much Acuna and then a bunch of names that I honestly don't even know.
No, I like Acuna very much, so I'll go with him.
If he plays the entire second half and puts up, like, hits 10 more home runs and he ends up with 16 home runs and, you know, 50, 60 RBIs and, you know, you look at his metrics, he'll win it. So
okay.
That's Manager of the Year. I got Scott Service. With the Mariners.
I would agree. Nobody,
especially if they break that curse of 20 years out of the playoffs.
Let's not forget, they're doing it without their best player.
Robinson
Cano.
Do you see something behind that? Like, remember when A-Rod left the Mariners?
The cooler?
A-Rod left the Mariners, they won 116 games.
No, I don't think so.
They get rid of Cano, and all of a sudden they start winning ball games.
No,
like,
they're very
they always
different
designed
guys.
To do with the Mariners?
No, they're very different guys. I actually think Cano was a positive influence in his clubhouse.
Yeah, but when it comes to Manager of the Year, it's never it's very rarely the manager with the most wins. It's always the manager who got the most out of their team.
Out of a team that wasn't expected.
So it's most valuable manager.
I would think, which is why in the NL I go with Brian Snitker. You know, this is a guy I hardly had heard of before, and now he's got the Atlanta Braves poised to win the NL East.
It's nice to see him, a guy that isn't like 37 or 38 years old, a guy that kind of toiled around and finally got his chance. We're seeing that with Callaway and Dave Martinez, two rookie managers, two young guys that are really struggling. But my NL manager here is our boy that we kind of ripped one of our first two podcasts, Gabe Kapler.
What?
Because I think the Phillies are somehow going to win the AL East.
Really? The NL East?
The NL East. So you heard it here first.
Wowee. All right. I don't know. Any guy that like goes to work in a Speedo, I just cannot vote for. I'm sorry.
Well, so you're taking that into account?
Yeah, without a doubt.
So if that's the case, then you can't vote Manny Machado for AL MVP because he has one of the worst haircuts I've ever seen in my life.
I don't think it's a bad haircut.
What?
I think it's pretty cool.
I have to end this podcast then.
Actually, it's the same haircut that you have if you just shaved your sides.
His is like way flopping all over. Mine's
a little
more like...
It takes guts.
I take a little more like on the side. I keep it nice and tight
on
the
sides. But he's like all in on it.
He's wild.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
And now I'm going to bring up a controversial topic here, Wally.
Okay.
To end the show. Because that's what we always do here on the show. We're just pressing controversy. We have Brian Kenny on, who loves sabermetric controversies. But you've seen this thing with Papa John?
I did, as a matter of fact. I did.
And, rough year for Papa John.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, he's not selling as many pizzas as he used to, but his pizza stinks anyway.
That's the thing. The Yankees should have cut ties with him once they took one bite of that pizza.
I mean, you're a New York team. How the hell do you possibly align yourself with a chain pizza?
Go to Joe's Pizza on 14th and 3rd.
Exactly. Go to Ray Famous Ray's or something.
Oh, famous Original Ray's or Original Famous Ray's?
I don't know which one is the actual Original Famous Ray's, but I mean, John's Pizzeria in the Village.
Oh, really
there's
good.
A million
Prince
places.
Street. Oh, man, a great
I mean, really, if you
slice.
Live in New York and you're going to Papa John's, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Of course, we should all be offended by the fact that that's the official pizza of the Yankees, and we should all be offended by what, you know, the reason I'm bringing up Papa John and on a baseball podcast is he said some disparaging remarks on a conference call, whether or not he was quoting someone or not, but he stepped down from his role as Papa John.
So now he's not Papa John anymore.
He's
good riddance.
Lower John or Little John. I don't know what he is, but the reason is because he's the official pizza of the Yankees. I know every time the Yankees score six runs, you get 50% of Papa John's.
Jeez.
See, listen, the Yankees
That's
have
like
scored,
a punishment.
The Yankees have scored six runs a lot of times this year. I've never dialed up my phone the next day. I go, you know what? I need some of this cardboard pizza in my life.
I'd love to find out from our listeners how many of you have actually gotten a Papa John's pizza after the Yankees
and they beat
runs.
It into your brain every you hear it the next day on WFAN. You hear it the next day all over the place.
They get paid to say it.
And they have like an official an alert. It's like the Yankees scored six runs, so that means you can go get 50%.
That means you can
Papa
go poison John's. Yourself at Papa John's.
So I don't know if the Yankees are going to sever ties with them. They're not going to be bullied. One
well,
thing.
I'll tell you what, they severed ties with Ronan Tynan. Remember the
love
guy?
That guy.
Yeah, except that he made some anti-Semitic remarks. And,
and
they
he
said,
made
you
those,
what?
Like,
you're
he's
out.
Being, like, secretly recorded, right?
Yeah, whatever. Whatever,
it was like
whether
secondhand.
He's secret or not. He said it, and the Yankees did the right thing and said, I'm sorry, this guy no longer represents our organization. That's the way it goes.
So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if they have, like, these ironclad contracts with these sponsors and
they
stuff.
They might.
You listen to a WFAN radio, a telecast of whatever you want to call it, broadcast of a Yankee game. There are so many sponsorships. It's like, that was the third pitch
every
of the game.
Every pitch is sponsored by somebody. It's ridiculous.
That's the seventh pitch of the game. So dial 777-77 and get your ride. At home this evening. So
yeah.
I don't know how the Yankees will treat this, but it's something that's kind of like, you know, gaining a little bit of traction here on social media. And as we know, you know, social media storms can brew.
They certainly do affect perception of organizations.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on everything that's going on with that. Maybe you can investigate in the Bronx.
I'll see what's going on.
The All-Star break's coming up, so you might.
We'll call the president.
Yeah, call up Randy Levine, see what he says. Hey, Randy, this is Wally.
Yeah.
Click.
Hey, Papa John's.
Don't ever
call me again.
I don't want to talk about the Nets. I want to talk about the
right.
Papa John. What's going on with him?
Before we go any further, Randy, this has nothing to do with netting or ticket prices. Okay, what do you got? Papa John's. Click.
Click. I don't want to talk to you, Wally. I'm done talking to you. But I think we're done talking for the day. Great podcast. Thank you to Brian Kenny.
He was wonderful.
The All-Star break is coming up. The Yankees are finishing in Cleveland. The Mets got the Gabe Kapler, my manager of the year, in playing in Citi Field.
Huh?
Are the Mets in Citi this week?
The Mets are at home this week.
You'll be covering
the Yankees are away. No, I will not. I have the weekend off.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and the All-Star break off.
And the All-Star break's great. I think we're going to take next week off. We're going to reset. I'm going to be on an island with Giancarlo.
Nice.
I don't need to go to the All-Star game. I don't need to cover the All-Star game. I'm just going to chill.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Will you watch the Home Run Derby?
Of course. I always watch.
You do?
Yeah, I'm a sucker.
Why?
I always watch the big events. I feel like I have to watch them. Like slam dunk contest, three-point shootout.
I don't want to sound like a snob, but I see batting practice every single day. That's all the Home Run Derby is. It's a long, prolonged, extended batting practice.
Well, the fact that they've added the
what
countdown
clock. I don't even know what they've
is. Countdown clock. It's really cool.
Which makes it even more pressure and more likely that your favorite player is going
to
hurt himself.
Yeah, like look what happened to Judge last year.
What's the point?
There was no doubt about that. Judge went into that slump and he hurt his shoulder because he was taking.
Oh, it's funny. He said
was trying 50 swings in 30 seconds.
He insisted daily because I was in that clubhouse every day. He insisted daily. It had nothing to do with it. This year he says, I'm never doing it again.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'll watch. I'll be watching, but that's it. So thank you to Brian Kenny. Thank you to Nick Canobio, our super engineer, for getting this set up. We're coming to you live from a Comfort Inn in Syosset today, not our main studio.
Very comfortable, though.
It is very comfortable. They got coffee, too. How is it?
Very good. Much better than
Yankee Stadium?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, before we leave, I was in Yankee Stadium for the Red Sox game last week.
Yes, and, we were both there.
And I found your secret coffee machine. I'm not going to say where it was.
How was it?
It was pretty good.
I told you, man.
I needed to pick
me
up because it was a very long game.
Keep it quiet, man. The coffee in the press box is like scooping out a cup full of Harlem River water and drinking it.
Oh, geez. Like the Gowanus?
That's how bad it is. Absolutely. Jeez, it glows terrible. Green.
All right. We'll see you next week, everybody.